Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Underdog Podcast from SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty.
Welcome back to another edition of the Conference USA Underdog Podcast. Good to be back with you, Joe Lonergan, alongside Eric Henry. How are you today, man?
Joe, I am doing all right, man. You know, this is typically the quick portion of the podcast where I sidetrack with a quick story here. I'm just going to launch right into it for you. You and I, you know, we've done this podcast now for a little over about a year and a half, and I have a confession for you. I am deathly afraid of mascots, specifically the ones that have giant heads that I cannot see the person behind it. You know, if you're like the Florida State mascot where you're a walking person, I'm cool with that, right? But if you have a giant head, I'm extremely afraid of it. And it kind of brings me to my point that I meant to make a few weeks back when I was a little under the weather, so we kind of rushed through that podcast. Western Kentucky brought a certain mascot to FIU, and I saw it on the field. And, Joe, what the hell is a Big Red? What the hell is that?
Big Red is love. Big Red is life. You know, that's what I keep telling people. I don't really know, to be honest with you. I don't know the origin of that. Specifically, I've tried to look it up a couple of times, and I feel like I always look it up and then immediately forget. But like, yeah, I don't know. He's just kind of an amorphous blob, and I think people just kind of get a kick out of how weird he is, and they've just kind of rolled with it ever since.
I just needed to get that off my chest. You as our resident Western Kentucky person, I needed to know what on earth that was. All right, we can start the podcast now.
That's actually a pretty good transition, just because I feel like we should just go ahead and start talking about the Western Old Dominion game from this past week first. WKU wins that one 20-3. Considering we were seeing Old Dominion gain some positive momentum offensively prior to this week, I think that speaks even more to how well Western's defense is actually playing right now. Not a perfect game, mind you, but they've allowed the second fewest points in the league at the moment. D'Angelo Malone added three sacks to his total in this game alone, which for Old Dominion, plenty they need to fix, obviously, but the biggest thing clearly to me is pass blocking, which they've allowed 19 sacks already this year, which is the worst in the league. And it's also kind of funny to me that, like, in a year where Tyson Helton's back, everybody's talking about how excited they are for kind of the revival of the passing game and kind of what the Tops were able to do 3-4 years ago. It's funny that Gage Walker's having as much success as he has so far. 426 yards, four touchdowns so far on 97 carries. And it's a converted defensive back still, mind you. I feel like I've talked a lot about the good things we've seen from him so far, but it's still really impressive to me. And the Toppers, a lot of positive momentum going in that divisional race so far.
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head as far as everything I would touch on. I'll just add this as far as Western Kentucky. There's been a decent amount of debate amongst Conference USA Twitter and Conference USA forums as to whether Western Kentucky is legit or not. That question may or may not be able to be answered so far, because you can look at some of their victories and say, hey, not necessarily against the top part of competition in Conference USA.
Sure.
Personally, I think that, you know, FIU, while record-wise isn't great, they beat a talented team. But this is what I would say about Western. The way they're winning games is what gives me hope that that this is sustainable, right? It's essentially by winning battles up front and the rushing attack. And specifically D'Angelo Malone. I had to do a double take, Joe, when I looked at his stats before I wrote my three things we learned about Conference USA piece on Sunday. I actually thought when I looked at him that his stats might be from last year through only five games this year. He's got seven sacks and something like 44 or 45 tackles just through five games, which means D'Angelo Malone is a legit, you know, candidate for defensive player of the year in this conference. That aside, Gage Walker, you mentioned being a converted defensive back. I don't know if that's more of an indictment on Mike Sanford for just having the guy at the position, because he played – he's actually a local kid from Tampa, East Bay High School, and he played running back in high school. So there's something that the previous staff saw in him that said we want to switch him to a DB, and there's something about this staff that said, hey, he's better fit at running back, and dividends are paying off. All things considered, it's a great win for Western Kentucky, and I, like I said, I think they have a formula to sustain success throughout the rest of this year, and can kind of bring the passing game and the rest of that along as the defensive line and the running game goes.
Yeah, I definitely think I agree with you that Malone's a candidate for defensive player of the year up to this point in the season. Hopefully for them, it's just about, you know, remaining consistent and, you know, doing the little things right. Because I feel like when they're confident, historically, Western Kentucky's played so much better. I think they definitely got down on themselves quite a bit the last 2 years. And I think that influenced the way they played for sure. And, you know, as you mentioned, there's definitely some kind of misjudgments that happened along the way with that last system, which is interesting because it's definitely a few of the same guys. But clearly they're starting to figure it out with the personnel that they have. So going to be an interesting few weeks for Western Kentucky, halfway to bowl eligibility already, which is definitely better than I thought they would be doing if you had asked me over the summer. Before we ramble on too much about the Toppers, let's talk about one of the more surprising results of the weekend, and that's MTSU beating Marshall 24-13. Kind of goes without saying, but huge win for Middle Tennessee State and just a critical loss for Marshall, considering this was a divisional title, or, well, divisional game, I should say. Both teams were kind of in contention for that divisional title earlier in the year. And, you know, I got to say, I feel like I'll just get this out of the way now before we get too deep into the season. I feel like I'm going to be eating crow a little bit about Middle Tennessee, because I seem to remember specifically saying there was like nothing about this team outside of Blankenship that really impressed me all that much. And clearly they're starting to show that they have something we should be impressed by so far into this year. We've talked about also how MTSU came out of that brutal non-con schedule and they were going to give specific people some trouble. Lo and behold, exactly what happened here. Meanwhile, on the Marshall side, for me, it seems like Isaiah Green is just really having some issues, particularly with ball security. I mean, he turned the ball over four times for Pete's sake. You can't do that and expect good things to happen.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. When you look at the box score, you know, obviously games aren't played on a box score, and you can say this about a lot of games when you play football or sports for that matter in general. But when you look at the box score, Marshall essentially won this game outside of Isaiah Green's four turnovers, which resulted in half of Middle Tennessee State's points right there. So that was the big difference. And it just comes down to quarterback play. The guy who I've been impressed with the most is Asher O'Hara. I hope I don't feel like a broken record, but if you could have seen his, I don't want to say inadequacy, but his room for growth, we'll put it that way, as a passer when he replaced Brent Stockstill last year at FIU, he was someone who clearly was more comfortable using his legs. Now he's improved, you know, twofold as a passer, and still has the same ability as a scrambler, as a runner. And just for me personally, as someone who's followed this conference for the past, you know, 2.5-3 years, it's like looking at a mirror image of Brent Stockstill, you know, a guy who's not the biggest quarterback in the world, not the fastest, but just makes plays and makes things happen. And once again, it's not to say that Marshall wasn't in this game. You know, if you take away Isaiah Green's four turnovers, they probably win this one somehow, some way. But if you're going to give a team like MTSU those type of chances, and if O'Hara is going to keep progressing as a passer, you know, Middle Tennessee State could do exactly what they did last year, which is survive that brutal non-conference schedule and just kind of, you know, slowly kind of stay under the radar in the East and pop up at the end. Now they've got they still have a two-game deficit they have to make up against Western, but they'll have the opportunities and they'll play Western later on in the season. So we'll see what happens. But hey, you got to give credit to Middle Tennessee State. They forced the turnovers and got the W.
Yeah, you know, it's really crazy that they're achieving the results they are. And you know, like I mentioned, particularly on defense, I feel bad because I'm blanking now, but I believe one of their defensive backs had two. Javonte Moffitt, that's who it was. Javonte Moffitt had two interceptions, and like, yeah, I guess I'm just impressed with some of the even the individual playmakers on that Middle Tennessee defense, along with just the results they're achieving as a team. Sneaky good, those Blue Raiders. Before we get into this next game, Eric, question for you. What's the longest delay you've ever had to sit through covering a game?
Wow, it probably was last year. I just racking my brain. Last year's delay lasted. It was similar to the one we're about to talk about, in the sense that for those of you listening who may not be adept with the NCAA rules as far as lightning, there is a certain radius around the stadium. I believe it is a 15-mile radius within the stadium that if lightning strikes, you will go into a delay. And each time lightning strikes within that radius, so you'll go into a delay and the clock will start at 35 minutes. The clock will start at 60 minutes that you have to – would be a mandatory delay. And each time there is a lightning strike, that clock will restart. And that happened last year. It was the Arkansas Pine Bluff game, I believe. It was one of the games. It was one of the early games last year, FIU. Mm-hmm. But that one lasted an hour and 24 minutes. So that one was pretty decent. So I'll let you go and launch on this one, which was much longer than an hour and 24 minutes.
Right. The UAB Rice game delayed 5.5 hours in total due to lightning on Saturday. UAB ended up winning that game 35-20. And it had to be frustrating for the people working and covering this game because, like, it was a 15-point win for sure. So not a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. But the point in time when the last part of that delay occurred, in my opinion, Rice didn't have enough time to kind of make the comeback. So they were just kind of like waiting all that time just to run the clock out, especially. So that's kind of my nightmare. I've definitely sat through some very long delays in my day, especially covering baseball and in the South. And, you know, given the kind of weather you get during that time of the year. Yeah, so that had to be brutal. In terms of the game, though, some bad news for UAB coming out of that one, as Spencer Brown apparently going to miss some games with a leg injury that he suffered here. Luckily, his teammates kind of picked up the slack offensively. Tyler Johnson had what I call a Brett Favre game here. some questionable decision making, but ultimately paid off for the most part. Finished that game with 3 touchdowns and 2 picks. So maybe something to watch if you're UAB's offensive coordinator. You definitely have a quarterback who's laying it all out there to get his team the wins, but probably not making the best throws and calls along the way. But you know, obviously they got it done. Meanwhile, on the Rice side, clearly they're getting there. Ashton Walter and Austin Trammell are legit, but if you lose 4 fumbles, that's not going to help your case when you're trying to get your first victory of the season.
It's funny you mentioned the length of that delay, Joe. I just really quickly, I normally my routine after I leave the press box at FIU or whatever game I'm covering is I watch the Pac-12 games because they come on late, and I tweeted out, oh yeah, you know, routine Pac-12 after dark. And some this guy on Twitter was like, hey, there's still a Conference USA game going. And I'm like, wait a minute, they didn't call that game? So I was shocked, and Evan Dudley actually tweeted out a picture of people in the remaining in the stands, and it could have been more than 500 people. But, you know, as to on the field, I think, you got to hit the nail on the head as far as Rice with the turnovers. The argument can be made, once again, especially when you're a team like Rice that's trying to develop that culture, trying to find a way to win games. You can't turn the ball over 4 times and think you're going to win, right? You really need to, not saying you have to play a flawless game, but you've got to play a fundamentally sound game, especially given the fact that Rice's passing attack isn't there yet. Because we look at everything else, it kind of worked to fruition. You know, the thing you and I have been harping about is that they needed some type of passing attack. Austin Trammell gets a 100-yard receiver, you know, kind of being that deep threat that could replace Aston Walter. runs for 102 yards. So the formula's there. You just can't turn over four times. As for UAB, my kind of feeling on them is this. With Spencer Brown being injured, you talked about Tyler Johnson having that Brett Favre type of game. Well, he's going to have to rein that in. Things are going to need to be fundamentally sound. Not that Lucius Stanley isn't capable of carrying the load. That's one of the things that Bill Clark has kind of done in his time since the program has, you know, kind of restarted, is Bill Deff at running back. But with the best player on your team out, it's going to take a concerted effort on his part to keep the ball in the hands of his own team. And also, how do you feel about, you know, just quick sidebar, Tyler Johnson III as a whole, he just seems to be a boom or bust quarterback just in terms of passing game. I mean, you see a lot of times with the receivers, their stat line will be like four catches for 120 yards. You see Kendall Parham, three catches for 109 and two touchdowns. He just seems to always throw the ball downfield, which I'm not complaining about. I love a guy who can throw the deep ball, but that just seems the crux of this game. I mean, 282 passing yards on 14 completions.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely seems to be the case. That's kind of why I made the Favre comparison. But yeah, I feel like anytime you have a quarterback like that, you have to be a little bit nervous if you're a coach or a fan, really. But I don't know. It's hard to get too down on the kid because his highs are so high. You know what I mean? They're the defending conference champs for you know, for the sake of the conversation or whatever. But at the same time, like, yeah, eventually he's going to have one of those days where it's, you know, instead of three touchdowns and two picks, it's going to be, you know, one touchdown and four picks or whatever. So, you know, at the same time, that's why I kind of felt the need to harp last week on like how bad I feel like the run blocking's been for UAB lately, because like, you know, in that game last week, Spencer Brown had what, like 22 touches for like 60 or 70 yards or something like that. So yeah, the imbalance on UAB's offense is clear, and when you're going to have to lean so much on the quarterback in that offense and his ability to make good decisions, you got to be a little bit better about that, I feel like.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there.
With that, then we'll just move on to FIU and UMass then. I feel like there was something else there, but I'm completely blanking on it. FIU beating UMass 44-0. You just mentioned you were at that game. Eric, what'd you think of the Panthers in this game? Clearly let out a little frustration against a pretty sorry UMass team, frankly.
Yeah, it's kind of two ways of looking at it, right? Which is one, the point you just made, it's a sorry UMass team. There's the other way of looking at it, which I will take the positive end, the optimist again, which is, but this is the first time this year that we've really seen the FIU team that we envisioned they could be coming out of, you know, last year and entering this year. It's the offensive, you know, potency is there. You see James Morgan, 19-31 for 263, you know, multiple running backs get involved. Anthony Jones had over 100 yards. Napoleon Maxwell gets over 60. Both of them score. This is kind of what you expected from the FIU team. And this is kind of what happened for them last year, right? Where they started the season slow. They had a loss against Indiana, kind of had a pedestrian game, but ended up winning late against Old Dominion. And then they had a game against UMass last year, blew them out 63-24, and that kind of jump-started the offense throughout the rest of the year, and, you know, being Conference USA's leading offense in terms of yards gained and points scored in the season last year. So that's the positive end for it. But outside of that, I mean, not too much you can take from it. This is actually the program's second shutout of all time. It's the first since 2002. And they set a program record for lowest amount of total net yards allowed. I believe it was 115. We got that in the post-game presser right there from SID Tyson Rogers. So, you know, all in all, just a good win for FIU. I'll say a funny anecdote that I'll share is Butch Davis. It was nice as someone who covers this team to have Coach Davis appear from the locker room in a rather timely fashion. Not to say that Butch is normally slow, but as most coaches can be, when you lose, you probably want to take a little more time to talk to your team about what they did wrong. And then, you know, coming off the Tulane massacre where it took Butch about 53 minutes to come out of the locker room and make a statement. It was nice to see him come out in 10 minutes, but he walks into the press room and there's another reporter who looked pretty sleepy, and Butch caught his attention and said, "Hey man, you know, is this boring to you?" And the reporter said, "Yeah, it was kind of a boring game." And Butch said, "Well, boring for you. You must not like winning." So that was kind of a funny anecdote. And then Maurice Alexander took a punt back for a touchdown, and we had a chance to ask fellow receiver Tony Gator about his speed. And Gator's response was, yeah, I told Maurice all the time, he has a little bit of Jamaican in him. That's why he's so fast. So there was plenty of quips coming from the press game press conference, but all in all, good win for FIU.
Yeah, you know, it's a very butch statement, first of all. That's funny. but, you know, second, what do you think's kind of been the difference between, you know, how this team's been acting in the last week and a half or so versus prior to that? Because clearly with a win like this, they have to be feeling a little bit more confident about themselves, right?
Yeah, and that's where the point you made off the top, the UMass factor has to come into account, because UMass isn't very good right now. But once again, to give credit to FIU, one of the major things was the offensive line. I mean, give credit to a guy like Lindell Hudson Jr., De'Anthony Demery, you know, a former Georgia recruit, the starting left tackle for this team, was suspended for the first half of the game because he threw a punch against Louisiana Tech, was ejected late in that one. That forced Devontae Taylor, the starting right tackle, to slide over to the left. And Lindell Hudson Jr. Comes up and makes his first career start at right tackle, and the offensive line doesn't miss a beat. And I mention that because it was an offensive line that had been struggling to protect James Morgan and get the running game going. So that's really going to be the key for not only for that game, but for the rest of the year. If they can get that rotation back up to last year, where they're playing 7, 8, 9 guys or 8 and 9 guys per game, that's going to make a huge difference going forward.
Certainly should. Hopefully they can sustain that momentum going into the next few weeks. Speaking of positive momentum, at UTSA getting some in a win over UTEP 26-16. Clearly a tough passing day for the Roadrunners, though, with only 46 yards through the air. But the running game, however, seemed to come together pretty well. 320 yards there. Sincere McCormick and Lil Narcisse are to thank for that. Two really great names there, by the way. But a nice little offensive revival for UTSA in this one. And meanwhile, UTEP, obviously plenty that didn't really go their way. But the thing that stuck out to me, 2 of 12 on third down for them. I feel like if you want to win games in this league, clearly you have to be able to come up when those situations arise.
Without question. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's Conference USA or, you know, high school football up the road. I mean, if you can't convert on third down, you're not going to win very many ball games, especially a program like UTEP that's trying to rebuild. Just looking at the quarterback numbers here, Brandon Jones, 14 of 22, 140, a touchdown, you know, pretty solid game. But Kyle Loxley, 2 of 8, 41 yards. And I understand the need to kind of rotate quarterbacks because it's not like either one has really established themselves. But I think at this point, you know, I like Kyle Loxley personally, and you know, we've talked about his off the field issues before. I think it's at the point here where you got to kind of just not necessarily cut bait. I don't mean, you know, get rid of him from the program. That's not what I mean. But at this point, I think Brandon Jones has earned enough of a right to say, hey, just let him ride it out. And maybe there's something we're not seeing in practice, why they still continue to rotate the quarterbacks. But to bring up to UTSA, you know, a local kid from San Antonio, Judson High School, Sincere McCormick, he's a recruit who everyone's been excited about. You know, if they can get something going with he and Brendan Brady, who actually only had 2 carries that game, but I think that's partially because of Lowell Narcisse. He's 115 yards on the ground as from the quarterback position. But Sincere McCormick, 22 carries for 189 yards and a touchdown. If they can get that going, that'll go a long way, especially since the passing game minus Frank Harris, who was out, might not be there. So definitely see if they can lean on the running game and maybe eke out another win or two this year. But all in all, hey, I'm not going to take anything away from UTSA. They got the win by hook or crook, and great job for them.
To quote Trent Dilfer, you cannot lose games and still win. So that's – I feel like that – I kept popping into my head as I was going over the results from this week, because there was just so many instances this week across the league that I looked at, you know, I was watching the game or I was reading box scores or whatever, and I was like, oh, you can't do that and win, like between turnovers and like bad execution and in crucial situations like that. It seems like it was just that kind of week in COSA.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, and what's crazy was it was only a handful of games, and it felt like it was that kind of week, right?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah.
You want to look forward to next week? How's that sound?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's start it off with Marshall and Old Dominion. As my thing got away from me here. But Marshall, Old Dominion, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time in Huntington, obviously. I think I got to pick the Thundering Herd for this one. Regardless of, you know, Isaiah Green last week, Marshall's good. I just think they're inconsistent. So hopefully they can kind of get a little fire under themselves and make something happen here. Whereas Old Dominion, I feel like there's just way, way more to fix there. Stone Smart, obviously playing tough. I still think he, you know, he's been a good leader to his team, all things considered. However, he can't do much for them if he's on his back the whole game. And that's kind of been the situation so far. You can catch that one on Stadium, by the way.
Yeah, you know, this is a great game, great week for Marshall to kind of rebound from last week. Isaiah Green definitely has to develop that consistency. So you just want to see him go out and play a complete ball game at home. You know, nice way to rebound. And for Old Dominion, hey, I'm going to laugh at Bobby Wilder here, right? Because they've been more competitive than I envisioned they would be through this part of the year. And Stone Smart looks to be a developing prospect. But once again, it's kind of hard to do, as you mentioned, when he's running for his life back there. And he is kind of really the only offensive playmaker. And it's just really surprising, really quick, that the pass blocking has been as rough for Old Dominion, especially with a guy like Isaac Weaver, who, I mean, it's just been a mainstay there on the offensive line at tackle. But yeah, overall, going to go with Marshall here to get the victory.
All right, in agreement on that one there. FAU and Middle Tennessee State, 4 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus. Owls are favored. Excuse me. I think that's pretty fair. Been really impressed with Chris Robinson and the way he's played this year. They were on a bye last week, but this should be a neat little duel between Robinson and Asher O'Hara. I think it's just going to be a matter of which defense steps up, and I think MTSU are not going to have a repeat performance of what they had against Marshall, and FAU is going to get this victory at home here.
I'm a little bit higher on Middle heading into this game. I just think that there's a formula for Middle Tennessee State to go in there and win, just play their style of football, especially when you mentioned Javonte Moffitt, DQ Thomas, and Reed Blankenship. It's not like they're lacking talent back there on defense. However, I do think FAU just has a little more firepower. It's a great matchup of dueling kind of contrasts at quarterback. Chris Robinson, a guy who's going to look to be a pocket passer who can move, but he's going to look to be a pocket passer against Asher O'Hara and look to use his legs. And also, growing up in Florida, we had the Bowden Bowls for years with Bobby Bowden and Terry Bowden. This is the first Stockstill Bowl, Joe. I'm surprised that you're not fired up about this as I am. We know Brent Stockstill will be facing his old man, not as a head coach. He's an offensive analyst for FAU, but going up against his old man, Rick, so that would be interesting to watch. But I do think FAU gets the victory.
I forgot about that angle. That's right. That's going to be weird for the Stockstill family. But yeah, it's not that I doubt the talent in Middle Tennessee secondary, by the way. It's just that I feel a lot better about the talent for FAU on the offensive side of the ball. So that's kind of my feelings on that. And then we got UTSA hosting UAB on ESPN Plus at 6 p.m. Eastern. While, we talked about how UTSA definitely did a lot of good things in their win over UTEP, just feel a little bit more confident in picking the Blazers for this one. I really feel like Bill Clark does a good job of kind of adjusting his team in between games, and I feel like he'll have them ready to go on the road here.
For me, this one's pretty simple. We talked about it ad nauseum, you know, earlier in the podcast. If Tyler Johnston plays an efficient game, UAB will win. If Tyler Johnson looks like the worst version of Tyler Johnson, which is the one who has, you know, 3 and 4 turnovers in a game, that's going to leave the door open for UTSA. Either way, there's clearly one team that's more talented than the other, and UAB should get the victory, but Tyler Johnson can't leave the door open with turnovers for UTSA to keep it close.
Absolutely. This next one should be pretty easy. Louisiana Tech hosting UMass, 7 p.m. Eastern, ESPN 3. Texter's actually favored by 33 points at the moment. Based on what we've seen out of UMass this year, I really don't see any reason to doubt that they'll kind of repeat the same sorry results. So Louisiana Tech's a pretty safe bet here, I think.
Yeah, someone who just saw UMass up close in person last week, you know, give them credit for beating Akron. I guess that might be more of an indictment on Akron than it is on UMass, but they're just lacking FBS talent, quite frankly. They're closer to an FCS team, and especially with their quarterback situation that is in flux as well. So expect Jamar Smith and company to go in there and get a victory, and by at least by 21 points, and make it a short, quick night for them. So Tech rolls.
Yeah. These next three are going to be significantly tougher to predict. Let's start with one that's going to get people on Twitter mad at us no matter what. Talking about Southern Miss hosting North Texas at 7 p.m. Eastern. I don't have the TV info in front of me at the moment, but I'm assuming it's on a network other than ESPN. Yeah, this one's tough. Eagles are favored by just 3 at the moment. Again, this is one of those games, if you had asked me over the summer, would have had no hesitation in picking North Texas. But based on the way like Jack Abraham and Kez Watkins have played recently, and just the weird struggles that North Texas have seemed to have earlier in the year, I think I'm going to pick Southern Miss. You know, I think that it's going to be a pretty high scoring game because I don't think either of these defenses are in fantastic shape at the moment. Yeah, based on how prolific Jack Abraham has been in this early part of the season, I think I'm pretty confident picking Southern Miss.
Man, well, I guess we're not going to make both fan bases upset because I'm going to go with Southern Miss as well. This is usually where, you know, we can get a response from both of those particularly vocal fan bases on Twitter. But no, I think you made all the points right there. Jack Abraham has taken the next step, in my opinion, and anyone who listens to this podcast knows how I feel about Quez Watkins. I think he's the difference maker for that Golden Eagle offense. You know, without Quez, they're a solid offense, but with Quez, it makes them a dynamic offense. And what I'm really looking forward to seeing in this game is all the talent that we thought that Southern Miss had on defense. I still think it's there. It just hasn't really played up to its potential. You know, guys like Racheem Booth and Kyle Hemby, et cetera. So I want to see if defensively they're able to rise to the occasion against a very potent North Texas offense. And I have Southern Miss as well. And that game, really quick, is the pesky TV info, which is not part of the ESPN family of networks. That is on Stadium's Facebook page.
Ah, thank you for pointing that out. So yeah, this is going to be a weird few days on Twitter, depending on when we get this up. But good thing I'm dialing back how much I use it anyway. And then let's talk about FIU hosting Charlotte at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. Panthers favored by 5.5. As much as Charlotte has improved as a program in drastic fashion, have a lot of good things on that team, I still feel pretty confident in picking FIU. I think the momentum they got this week will hopefully help them kind of get back on the track we thought they would be on earlier this year. And it's just hard to kind of doubt, James Morgan when he's healthy. And by all accounts, he seems to be healed up pretty nicely.
No, James, you know, he is wearing a pretty thick brace on his left knee, but he looked pretty well moving. I mean, he looked well against La Tech moving, looked well last week moving. So, you know, the injury isn't an issue. For me, it's going to come down. Here's the fact of the matter, what's going to come down to. Can FIU stop a potent rushing attack? There's a couple stats that I've been putting out, you know, in either my game previews, game notes, or on Twitter. Benny LeMay, in his collegiate career, the team who he's had the most success against would be FIU. He's had 352 yards and 6 touchdowns in 2 career contests against them. Charlotte will be getting Jalen Fisher, their starting center, back. That was an issue last week or 2 weeks ago with the errant snaps over Chris Reynolds, who's already 5'10", the errant snaps over his head. So I think this game's going to be a lot closer than people think. I'm going to give the edge to the Panthers at home because I really think last week they were able to tap into what people expected from that offense and really get things going. However, you cannot be surprised if Charlotte walks out of FIU with a victory just because of the Benny factor. Here's another stat for you. In the last 2 games that this series has played between FIU and Charlotte,
The games have come down to a combined total 8 points. In 2017, it was a one-point win for FIU. Last year, it was a seven-point win at Jerry Richardson Stadium. So expect another close one. I expect FIU will win. But, hey, if Charlotte's going to win, it's going to be on the legs of Benny LeBay.
For sure. I think this is going to be the most entertaining game of the weekend, probably. So definitely tune into that one if you can. And then finally, Western Kentucky hosting Army at 7 p.m. Eastern on Stadium's Facebook page, I believe. So that should be a fun game. Here's the thing. This is a bold prediction. I'm going to go with Western. You know, I think Army's definitely lost a little bit of momentum since the start of the season, coming off of a loss, if I'm not mistaken, to Tulane at home. That's their first home loss in a while. Despite winning 52-21 against Morgan State the past week, or the week before that, rather, definitely showed that they're mildly vulnerable to the pass. And I think Western's offense is just balanced enough right now. And frankly, that Western defensive line is just on a roll. And I think that's exactly what you need when you're facing an offense the likes of Army. So picking the Toppers.
Once again, you know, we're in agreement here. I just think for Western, that formula that I mentioned, it's really sustainable. You know what I mean? You're talking about defensive line, Juwan Jones and D'Angelo Malone. Those guys are just balling every week right now. And it's not like the rest of that Western Kentucky defense doesn't have talented guys as well. You talk about a safety in Devin Key who can really ball. So just, you know, pleasantly surprised at what we've seen out of Western this year. And in Army, you know, they've got a guy like Kelvin Hopkins, who is a danger on the ground, not necessarily as a passer. But I just think that Western Kentucky defensive line will find ways to make plays, and the offense, you know, it's going to buy time for a guy like Ty Story to get more comfortable in the offense. And Gage Walker, once again, you know, local kid out of Tampa, East Bay High School. It's been a pleasant surprise. I think they'll get him going as well and just allow time for Ty Story to feel comfortable back there and make the plays that are needed, not try to do too much. And I think Western wins.
Yeah, that's going to be another super entertaining game. So check that out if you can. Hope I gave the right TV information for that, but we'll see. If you made it to the end of the show, thank you so much for listening. Enjoy doing this as always. Eric, we got the numbers from SB Nation recently. I'm really happy with how much this show has grown the past couple of months.
No, we actually did. Yeah, both of us did get that in our email. And most we can say is, hey, thank you for all of you who do listen to us. It's greatly appreciated. I know I think I can speak for Joe here when I say that we greatly enjoy doing this podcast as fans of Conference USA. It's never a chore doing this podcast. So thanks for listening. And we're going to try, you know, to just kind of keep this thing growing as much as we can, you know, do what we did last year in the offseason, bring guests, bring people from around from Conference USA. And once again, thank you for listening. It's greatly appreciated, guys.
Absolutely. Another thank you to our producer, Taylor Bauer, as well. If you want to follow either of us on Twitter, we're at @JoeHio_ and at @EricCHenry_. Follow Underdog Dynasty on Twitter as well. That's just at Underdog Dynasty. Like them on Facebook if you're still on that. And check out Underdog Dynasty every day for more G5 football stuff. Happy to bring it to you. And hopefully we get to keep doing this for a long, long time. Bye. Happy football watching.